Yo, welcome back. Welcome back to That One Studio. It's your boy C-Rock here on the What Are You Made Of show. Another great guest. You know, I like bringing guests on to do some stuff that's just different, man. And, you know, I've had a lot of thoughts and about what this guy does and questions about it myself and doubts about it myself. And I'm interested in hearing more about what my man Mark Podolsky does. Mark Podolsky's in the building. He's the owner of Frontier Properties, a land investment company. Mark, aka the Land Geek, is widely considered the country's most trusted and foremost authority on buying and selling raw, undeveloped land within the United States. I checked out his website also. It looks like they coach and teach people. And Mark, welcome to the show, man.
Mike, thanks so much for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, man, I'm glad to have you here. And as I said, I love unique people. And what you're doing is unique to me because a lot of people are investing in the multifamily space. I even had a storage facility investor come on, and then everybody else is in their 401ks and all this other stuff. But very few people I've met ran into are doing land investment and know anything about it. So I'm glad to have you here, bro.
Yeah. Thanks so much. I mean, I have a very simple mission. I just want to help people solve not just their money problems, but their time problems. And if you can create a passive income without any headaches, no renters, no rehabs, no renovations, no rodents, I think it's the ultimate subscription model. And so I just teach people how to do it. It's great.
Yeah, I love it, man. Well, we'll get into that in a second. But let me ask you the question first that we start the show with every time. And that's, what are you made of?
Yeah. So what am I made of? I think if I was going to look at, you know, just really get self-aware, I think my best quality and my worst quality is my patience. And I think that's, you know, I meditate every day. I do breath work every day. And so whatever comes to me, I'm pretty patient with it. And sometimes to my detriment, where I could, you know, be, you know, putting up with too much for too long, right? But from a business perspective and from a relationship perspective, those daily bumps don't really throw me off course.
Love it. So you're not necessarily talking about patience where you have no patience or little patience. You have sometimes too much patience.
I have too much patience.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have a lot of patience. At first when you said
it, I went to where I am, where I have little patience sometimes. And I've been working on that. So I've been meditating, praying, and doing some things also of understanding what time actually is and how it's a man-made creation or man-made concept. And so I have this thing, and I love to hear your thoughts on this, but I have this thing called patient urgency, where I'm patient with the process and understanding I can't give birth to an adult. Not, I can't give birth to anything, but I'm just saying you can't give birth to an adult. And frogs have to be tadpoles first, right? But urgency in the fact of if I have something in my head, for example, today I had a client of ours that had some concerns and questions about her presentation when we're presenting to her. And instead of waiting and for my team to reach out to her, I jumped on it right away and I called her. And I just had right away, like she knows that she's important to me now. So patient urgency. But with your thing, so do you have issues with getting, you know, attacking things sometimes where like it definitely needs to be attacked?
No, I'm like you. I'm impatient with my actions, but I'm patient with my results.
So yes. Okay. So you're patient urgency. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm patient urgency.
I like it.
Yeah. So yeah. So I'm just, you know, I'm very long-term thinking. So, you know, people are like, oh, what are your goals? I mean, I set like, you know, 20-year goals and just think, you know, on a long enough timeline, these things are going to happen. And that way I'm not constantly stressed out. I didn't hit this goal, but in the end, but definitely like I'm impatient. I want my team to be impatient with our actions. Like let's keep working towards these, you know, huge goals, but let's give it a long enough timeline.
Yeah, I love it, man. All right. So we're talking about land here a little bit today. And I want to know about you, though. Like, where did it all start for you? Where did you come from? What's your story, Mark?
Yeah. So if we rewind the tape to 2000, I was a miserable, micromanaged, 45-minute commute to work and back investment banker specializing in mergers and acquisitions with private equity groups. And Mike, it got so bad for me. I wouldn't get the Sunday blues anticipating Monday coming around. I'd get the Friday blues anticipating the weekend going by really fast and having to be back at work on Monday. So my firm hires this guy, and he's telling me that as a side hustle, he's buying up raw land, pennies on the dollar. He's flipping them online, and he's making 300% return on his investment. And I'm looking at companies all day long, and a great company, great, has 15% EBITDA margins or free cash flow. Average companies, 10%. I'm looking at companies all day long, less than 10%. So, of course, I don't believe him. So I've got $3,000 saved up for car repairs. I go to New Mexico with him, and I do exactly what he says to do. I buy 10 half-acre parcels, an average price of $300 each. I flip them online. They all sell for an average price of $1,200 each. It worked. So I took all that money and went to another auction. This is where I live in Arizona. And, you know, it's 2000. There's no one in the room, and I'm buying lots and acres for nothing. I flip all that land. I made over $90,000 cash. So I go to my wife. She's pregnant. I said, honey, I'm going to quit my job, become a full-time land investor. She's like, absolutely not. So I said, okay. So it took 18 months for the land investing income to exceed the investment banking income. And then I quit. I've been doing it full-time ever since. I've done over 6,000 transactions and counting now, and absolutely love it.
Well, so with the number of transactions you've done, does it seem and come easy now?
Well, it's easy in the sense that I have a team now. So yeah, I'm really working on the business. And so that part is easy. I think what's always a challenge is getting better. And this idea of Kaizen, continuous improvement. So where can we become more efficient? How can we work smarter? How can we, you know, how can we just up level? Like, how do we do this bigger, better? And so I think that's really my role as CEO now is just thinking and breaking things that are already working. Like, what happens if we try this?
Yeah. And then seeing out in the future, you know, thinking about that. Yeah. And then what's the average like price of a half acre you're doing now? Like, are you still doing that same kind of thing? Half acre lot?
Yeah. I mean, they're very expensive. I would say the average price probably now is, you know, $2,500.
Yeah. That's crazy.
It's crazy.
It's wild, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I don't even know where to go with this because I got some questions.
I can just walk you through the model so you just understand it.
Yeah. Before you do that, though, I want to know about that, but I want to know more about you, though, Mark, because I want to get to know you. What are some of the things like when you, like, I guess, how did you get into investment banking in the first place? And what are some of the biggest challenges you've dealt with and adversities you've dealt with in your life, not just professional?
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, to answer the first question, how do I get into it? So I was working with dentists out of college, and I would help them buy and sell their practice. I was like a dental broker. And so these private equity groups started buying up the solo practitioners. And I'm like, they're hurting my market. I'm like, what's a private equity group? And so I was living in Kansas City at the time, and I didn't want to really be in Kansas City. So I wanted to move to Scottsdale, Arizona. And I just started, you know, looking for companies that I thought I'd be a good fit for. I'm like, oh, there's this company that specializes in mergers and acquisitions with a private equity group. I'm like, that's perfect. So I thought if I can't beat them, I'll kind of join them. And so that's how I got into it. And then as far as adversity is concerned, I mean, I would say life is just hard, Mike. Like, it's all hard, right? You know, as far as just day to day, it's just hard, right? I mean, nothing's easy. Anything worth doing isn't easy. And I'd say for me, you know, I might make it look easy, but I work really hard at it. I work really hard at my self-care. I work really hard at testing whatever we're going to test in business and then letting go of what happens. And I think working hard at being happy. I mean, I was listening to a podcast the other day and I thought this guy said it so well, like just having low expectations. I mean, if I wake up every day and I think everything's going to go wrong today and it doesn't, great, right? What a great day. Like, it's amazing, right? But when things do go wrong, we can just let it, you know, like you used to like derail me, like, oh, like it's just this sense of entitlement that I'm entitled to like a good day. And I kind of just reverse it and try to just have these very low expectations. And, you know, like I'm not even entitled to my next breath. And so just to try to, you know, live in that space of sort of gratitude for everything and saying yes to everything. I think, you know, Jocko Willink has always said, like, you know, no matter what happens, just say good.
Good, good. Yeah, good. I like that.
Yeah. So yeah, you know, I work on that, but I think it's all hard though.
Yeah, but like to think about that, what you just said, when it comes to having low expectations, I get it. I get it where you'd be like happy with whatever happens above what your expectations were, but does it keep you down and limit you? That's my concern with that is always like, if I do that, then I may not push myself to go to where I'm potentially capable of going.
Yeah, no, I think it's different in the sense like there's all these things I can't control. So I just keep low expectations of that. But for myself and the team, yeah, we have high goals. We have high expectations. We want to do a great job and provide value for everyone. But there's so many things we can't control. So just working on that and kind of dealing with that as it comes up and not taking it so personally, right? So I always think of like of a duck, right? I want to be a duck. Like the duck is just swimming furiously below the water, but they just seem calm and serene above it. And so that's just like you, that patient urgency. I want to try to work on that every day. And, you know, it's hard because life's just hard.
Yeah. You know, I had experience today, man. I'll share with you real quick about meditating. You know, I've been really practicing meditation. And one of the things in meditation, I get really clear on what I want. Right. But, and by the way, let me preface this by saying I'm a Christian. I have faith. I respect all faiths and beliefs of other people, but I have just a firm faith in Christ and read the Bible many times and studied the Bible. But, and I start relating the Bible to a lot of science that's happening now with quantum and putting the two together. And I study other religions as well. And it's all a lot of times saying similar things. But one thing that I noticed is that when I pray and meditate, I ask my higher power, God, for giving me the thoughts, the words, actions, and the environment to keep, to serve whatever mission that you're having for me, right? Whatever that is. And when it comes to me, I assume that's coming from God because I asked for it. And then I start painting that picture of in my mind what that's going to look like. And then I get this intense, today was the most intense ever. I don't know why today, but it had this most intense emotion and feeling from the outcome of what I was talking about. And usually when I did this in the past, I'd never had this intensity, but I've done this in the past and the thing just appears, like the person appears, the thing appears, the opportunity, the road opens up. I don't know. It's just wild how it works. But have you ever had experienced that? And do you meditate that way?
I don't really meditate like that in that sense, but I definitely have had those experiences where, you know, like great things just happen. Like I'll kind of think like, oh, it wouldn't be nice if I, you know, got a cash sale because I need cash. And all of a sudden you get a big cash sale because most of my deals are on owner financing. We just want that passive income. But there's sometimes, I'll need cash and it'll just happen. And it's like, or, you know, that connection that it's just, it's weird. I mean, you know, not to get too woo woo, but I do think that when you sort of tap into this higher power, the universe is working for you in lots of weird ways. You just got to kind of pay attention to it. I think it's all about that awareness. I mean, I think a lot of people day to day are just kind of sleepwalking through life and they're not seeing it. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's hard, right? It's hard to kind of get out of that stuff.
Well, and I want to get into your methodology after this, but I want to say one more thing. By the way, woo-woo, that's for people that don't believe. That's fine. They're never going to see it. If you believe this stuff, it happens. I've seen this so many times, and I've started to practice this thing where when things happen, I start to say, of course. Because usually when something wild like that cash deal happens, or, you know, we have packages of shows that we do at the agency. And one of the packages that we have, the top one is 60 shows, right? And this one lady who's now a friend of mine, awesome lady, she said, well, what if I wanted to buy like 200 or 300 or whatever, the higher number? And I didn't want to go like that high to be committed that much. I said, let's just start at 100, right?
Right.
But that, like, our top package is 60. I never would have thought somebody would have asked for higher than that. But in the meditation process, I was going through some of these scenarios. What if we did? And all of a sudden it came. And so I say, of course. Because if we say amazing, or we say, wow, I can't believe it. It's unbelievable. Then what we do is we forget about what we caused and created by doing the meditation in the first place and praying or whatever you believe in. We take that away, and now we put this thing on a pedestal like it happened just out of the chance, right? It's unbelievable. And then you stop being able to cause and create going forward. Does that make sense?
I love it. I love it. I'm stealing that now. When good things happen, I'm just say, of course. And then no matter whatever happens, I'm say, good.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Good. Yeah. Course. I'm telling you, this is powerful stuff. And the funny thing is, most people hear this and they still don't do it. So I'll just sit here. Me and you could sit, just do our thing, man. And we'll just be here causing and creating.
Yeah. So, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. All right,
so Mark, let's get into the process, because, you know, passive, how the heck do you get passive income from raw land that's not being built on? You're not renting out necessarily. Like, let's talk about that. So what's the process? Take us. As much as you want to share without ruining your book, that I know you have a book.
No, it's all good. No, I'm an open book. Okay, so Mike, where do you live?
I live in Maryland on the East Coast.
Okay, so I'm going to assume that you own 5 acres of raw land in Colorado.
Okay.
And you owe $200 in back taxes. So you're advertising two important things to me. Number one, you have no emotional attachment to that raw land. You're in Maryland, the property's in Colorado. And then you're also advertising you're financially distressed in some weird way, because we don't pay for things like our property taxes. We don't value them in the same way. As a result, the county treasurer keeps sending you notices saying, Mike, if you don't pay your property taxes, you're going to lose that property to a tax deed or a tax lien investor. So all I'm going to do is look at the comparable sales on your 5-acre parcel for the last 12 to 18 months. And then I'm going to take the lowest comparable sale. Let's say it's $10,000. And then I'm just going to divide by 4. And that's going to get me what Warren Buffett would call a 300% margin of safety. So I'll send you an actual offer of $2,500 on your 5-acre parcel. Well, you accept it. Why? Because for you, $2,500 is better than nothing. In reality, 3 to 5% of people are going to accept my quote-unquote top dollar offer. But now that you've accepted it, I have to go through due diligence or in-depth research. I got to confirm you still own the property. Back taxes are
title
only
search,
$200.
Lien search.
Yeah. Lien search. No liens or encumbrances. There's no breaks in the chain of title. And I outsource that either to a title company or to my team in Jamaica. They're connected to an American title company. So it's $5,000 or less. I'll just have my team do it. And I might take a little bit of title risk, but not much, because it's not like a house. There's not really a long chain of title on these. So, and that costs about $11. So I confirm everything works out, send you a check for $2,300, send the treasurer a check for $200. I own it free and clear. And now I'm going to sell it 30 days or less and make a cash flow like a rental.
Did you say 3 days or less or 30?
30.
30 days or less. Okay.
Right. So all I'm going to ask for is a $2,500 down payment, and then I'll make it a car payment. Let's say $297 a month.
Whoa,
9% interest.
Just so everybody heard that. So you pay $2,500, give or take for it, $2,500. You're going to require the amount you already paid towards the down payment. So now you're even, basically.
Right.
Okay. I just want to make sure everybody caught that.
Yeah. And then I'll make it a car payment. Let's say $297 a month and 9% interest the next 84 months. But as far as the marketing is concerned, Mike, I've got a built-in best buyer that no one else in real estate has. Do you know who it is? It's the neighbors.
Oh, yeah.
So I'll send out neighbor letters saying, hey, here's your opportunity. Protect your privacy. Protect your views. Know your neighbor. Now, if the neighbors pass, I'll go to my buyer's list. The buyer's list passes. I'll go to a little website you may have heard of. It's called Craigslist. It's 15th most trafficked website in the United States. I'll go to one I know you've heard of called Meta or Facebook, buy sell groups, the marketplace. And then I'll go to the lands, landmodo.com, landandfarm.com, landsofamerica.com, landflip.com, landhub.com, land.com. These are platforms where people buy and sell raw land. And then as long as I get my pricing right, it'll fly off the shelf. And then it's a simple game, Mike. Can I create enough of these land nodes where my passive income exceeds my fixed expenses? And then I'm working because I want to, not because I have to. And I'm not dealing with any of the headaches. No renters, no rehabs, no renovations, no loans. And because I'm not dealing with the tenant, I'm exempt from Dodd-Frank, RESPA, and the SAFE Act, all this onerous real estate legislation. And so I think it's the ultimate subscription model.
So $2,500, let's say on this property, this example, right? And what if somebody says, nah, I don't want to do the financing. Then what do you do?
Pay cash. I'll take the cash. And then
how do you price it at that point?
Well, I'll give them, so the way I'm pricing it is because of time value of money. So it might be really a very high price. So I'll give them a 20% discount for cash.
Okay. So let's say 2,500 and you were going to be selling it for 10 grand. Is that would be kind of the price for that scenario?
Yeah.
And then you give them a 20% discount, maybe sell it for 8 grand.
Yeah.
And be done with it.
Be done with
but
it.
That you don't get the passive income, but you're getting a turnover real quick of a flip.
I'm getting a turnover. Yeah. I mean, a lot of people, like, I don't want cash. I want cash flow. But look, customer wants to pay cash. I'm not going to argue with them.
Right. Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So, and what would that turn out to be if you did do that with the 8 years? Would you say 8 years financing?
8 years. Yeah. I mean, you know, usually we're looking at a yield calculator to kind of calculate what we want on these. I mean, we want a minimum yield of about 72% on these deals. So, you know, we're doubling the money every year at a minimum, but it just depends on the market, what the market can bear, where we're at with inflation. Inflation is kind of our friend in this business as well.
And is this land generally that would be built upon at some point, or is it farmland sometimes? You do farmland too?
Yeah. I mean, sometimes it's farmland. Sometimes it's buildable properties. Sometimes it's recreational land. And, you know, I've learned the hard way after doing this 23 years, there's a pig for every barn. So just because I don't like the land doesn't mean there's not somebody at the right price that would love the land.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And have you gotten into, like, what's the biggest tract of land you bought in one swoop?
Well, we just bought 1,600 acres in Tennessee. We're subdividing that now, putting the roads.
Oh, you're doing that now too?
Yeah, yeah. So we do bigger deals as well.
Okay. Yeah. And 1,600, and was that like a tax sale too? Like, you got it really good price?
No. So the way that we do it now is we don't go to tax sales anymore. We want to send out offers. So we want to get those deals before they go to a tax sale.
Okay.
But when I first started, I didn't even know about that.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. And then I guess my next question is, what's the purpose of teaching others to do this now? Instead of just focus on scaling your business.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's so funny because... like my wife asked me the same thing. She's like, why are you teaching people how to do this? Like, you're going to create your own competition. And so I put on my investment banking hat and, like, there's billions of acres available for sale in this country. You, me, a million people can get in this niche. We'll all run out of money before we run out of deal flow. So there's plenty for everyone. But I think for me, it's been the most gratifying thing I've done professionally because nobody ever really said to me, hey, Mark, you changed my life with this land transaction. They like the land, but to help somebody be able to quit their job, their spouse quit their job, spend more time with their family, to do the things they really love to do in life because they've been able to eliminate their money problems and their time problems and move up Maslow's hierarchy of needs into self-actualization and really figure out their true purpose in life has been amazing for me. And I, you know, I'm excited to do it every single day and want to serve and help more and more people do it.
And so I love that, man. Love it. Of course, I knew the answer to that, but I have to let everybody else hear it because I say it all the time and then they got to hear from somebody else. You know, it's like your kids. You talk to your kids all the time and they don't listen to you until somebody else says the same thing. So let me ask you this then. What's the worst thing that's ever happened in business since starting this kind of business? Like, what's a bad transaction that went wrong?
So I've had a lot of bad transactions that went wrong. I mean, you know, it's funny because I haven't lost money on a deal, which is sort of weird to say because we're making our money on the buy. But I would say that when I first started, you know, I didn't have a mentor. So, and I also didn't have a lot of humility because things kind of came so easily. So I think, you know, starting off and not having that struggle was a huge disservice to me. And, you know, from 2000 to 2007, I was just flipping for cash and it was great. But then, and I talk about this in my book, Dirt Rich, like I had Parkinson's Law of Money. So the more money I made, the more money I spent because I felt empty inside. Right. And I thought, oh, you know, just like, there's just never enough. So I had to get a bigger house. I had to get a bigger cars, kids, you know, private school, my wife didn't work, so let's get a nanny, let's get a housekeeper. And I kept building up all this huge overhead. None of it made me happy, by the way.
Yeah.
And then 2008 comes along and we hit the Great Recession, and I'm like, wait, you know, there's got to be a better way to do this. And so, you know, that, you know, I think it was at that time, it was a huge ego hit that I needed. So it felt, I felt like a huge failure. But when I look back, you know, I think having that, you know, I heard a phrase the other day, the best financial asset you can have is not caring what other people think. And then, you know, I didn't need to keep up with the Joneses anymore after that. And I realized, holy cow, I've got this resilience. I can be happy on steak and lobster, and I can be happy on beans and rice, because all the really important things are internal. There's nothing out there that's going to make me happy. But I didn't realize
I love it. This is good stuff, guys. If you're listening to this, paying attention, taking notes, you better be, because like I went through this recently. Like I've had a Mercedes before. I got this watch, right? This isn't a Rolex or anything. It's a Breitling. I think I spent 10 grand somewhere in that ballpark back in 2012, right? I don't have any interest in watches anymore. I love this watch. I've had it, but I don't have any interest. I don't go look at another watch. That stuff's gone. The car, I had the Mercedes. I don't give a shit about Mercedes's. I have a nice house here, but like I could live in a small condo somewhere. I just don't care about that stuff. Clothes, I buy t-shirts. This is a cheap t-shirt, guys, by the way, right? It's a cheap t-shirt. I got my logo on it. I have hats coming that have my logo on it. I don't need designer. I don't care about that stuff. It doesn't make me, like you're saying, it's 100% right. I care about impact. This is why we align, Mark. I care about impact and making people's lives better. Because you just said life can be hard. I don't think it has to be, but it can be hard. And when we wake up in the morning with a servant heart, it is the most fulfilling. No money could buy that.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, when I think about, you know, what's hard about life, I think it's like we're going to lose everyone and everything. It's just all loss, right? You live long enough and you start seeing it, right? The aging process is brutal. You know, I lost my sister to COVID, right? It's just a lot of loss. You know, eventually, if things go well, your kids leave the nest, you lose them, right? You get them for 18 years and they're gone.
Yep.
Right. And so I just think in that sense, like, it's just if you don't have the right mental attitude, so to speak, like what you're saying, of course, good. It can be really challenging for people because there's that sense like, why, you know, they're like, why me? Why me? When it happens to someone else, no one's bothered by it. When it happens to you, you're like, oh my gosh, this is a catastrophe.
Yeah.
And so, I think that's what makes it hard. And you're right. It doesn't have to be, but I think for most people it is.
Yeah, man. I love this stuff. So have you gone into raising funds and starting a fund for what you do?
Yeah, we have one for accredited investors only. I can't really publicly talk about it, but if someone, you know, was interested, they could reach out to me individually.
Yeah, but I mean, you went into not just using your own funds and all that and looked at other, you know, creating a syndicate, so to speak, or whatever, right?
Yeah, I mean, I help everybody along the economic spectrum, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, even rich people who want to become wealthy, right? And that's what we do with the fund.
Yeah.
Because, they've solved their money problems, they haven't solved their time problems.
Yep. Yep. Awesome. So from here, you have a podcast where you talk about passive income and all that. Can you tell us, first of all, why did you start the podcast? Number two, two questions. I'm always throwing two questions at see how sharp people are. but why did you start the podcast? And then what did you get from your business? And personally, what changed for you as you've done podcasting?
Right. The podcast has been amazing. So I think, you know, when I first started it, I can't even listen to my first podcast. This is like, I was like an OG. I think it was like 2011. I started the Land Geek podcast. It was terrible. And there was no personality to it. I was flat. But what was good about it was that the information I was giving was good. My delivery was terrible.
Yeah.
And then I kind of got bored with that. And then I started the Best Passive Income Model podcast, where I'd have guys like Grant Cardone on. And I would say, I'd walk them through my model. And I'd say, do I have the best passive income model? And then I got bored with that shtick. So then I started the Art of Passive Income Model podcast maybe 5 years ago. And then that one is just every week I have myself, my coaches. We talk about a pain point in the land business and our roundtable. And then I interview a guest like you. I just selfishly want to talk to interesting people. It might be about passive income. It might be about real estate. It might just be about business. I had Derek Sivers on. I had, Nir Eyal on. New York Times bestselling authors. Like, just selfishly, I want to just meet these people. So for me, the podcast serves my curiosity. And I get access to people I would not normally be able to ever meet if I didn't have a podcast. So that serves me selfishly. And then also from a business perspective, I think there's nothing more intimate than, being in someone's car for 20, 30, an hour, right? And they kind of get to know you in a way. And so there's that sense of, if he's good enough to talk to Mike, he might be good enough to learn more about his business. And so you get that, that halo effect on a podcast that you wouldn't normally get as any other marketing channel, if you will.
That's awesome. I just looked at the time. Dude, you're such a great guest, man. I'm having such a good time. I didn't even pay attention to the clock. I apologize. Tell the next person that you're going on a show right now. Tell them that I apologize.
Yeah, no,
I take full responsibility, Mark.
I was
having so much fun answering these questions. So look, hey guys, this is Mark Podolsky. Go check him out. Mark, where's the best place for them to reach you?
TheLandGeek.com.
TheLandGeek.com.
All right, TheLandGeek.com. I'll text you. I got a link to my free book. You got to pay shipping, but I got a free book for you.
What's the link for that? Can you say it, or is it on
LandGeek? I don't even know it. It's like a special link.
Guys, go to TheLandGeek.com. His information's there. Mark's information. You can reach out to him. Let him know you want that free book, and we'll also put it in the show notes. Mark, thank you so much for being here, man. Thank you all for listening and watching the What Are You Made Of show. Keep coming back. Until next time, it's your boy C-Rock in the building on the What Are You Made Of show from That One Studio. Be That One.